The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Scooby-Doo from 2002. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a fun take on a family favourite cartoon series, or is it biting off more than it can chew? We watched Scooby-Doo from 2002 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got that I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what a redeeming feature.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast. This time, at my suggestion, we're looking at Scooby-Doo, the movie from 2002. I'm your co-host Trevor Holland and I'm joined by my good friend...
Christian Fletcher. Thanks Trevor for having me back. Gosh, I didn't think it would happen after our last catastrophe. We will not even mention the name of the film, but thank you very much for having me back.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, look, it's not very often that you can get a movie... that outdoes the movie that I consider was the worst movie I had watched so far for this podcast. So kudos to you in some strange way.
Well, actually, kudos to you actually for bringing this film back to my attention, because I had seen it a couple of times when it came out, thinking when you suggested it, why is this regarded as a bad movie? And obviously my thoughts will proceed with this conversation. But I thank you for opening my eyes again to something that I haven't seen for probably about a decade or 15 years. So yeah, it is a bit of a refreshing change.
Fair enough. Now, before we do go on with Scooby-Doo, and just to tie in something, just some important news that I think affects our Redeeming Features cast and what would have been a potential future episode. Now, you know, before that previous movie that we talked about just before, my least favourite movie I'd ever watched was Blood Rain, and I had dragged you in for the two sequels, and we were lamenting that if a Blood Rain 4 ever came out, that we would have to watch it. Well, with the recent announcement of Uwe Boll that he has retired from filmmaking... we're going to have less Redeeming Features movies to watch!
But you never know, Trevor. I was actually looking at the silver lining, thinking, hang on, he might actually exit retirement if he stumbles on the Rufus Project and goes, wow, but hang on, our Redeeming Features don't exactly give someone cause to make another movie. But yeah, definitely...
I don't know.
Good news, I suppose.
There is much rejoicing on the internet. Let me tell you that. It's still happening. I've been following the story. But, I mean, seriously, our last time we looked at one of his movies, being Blood Rain 3, I think we finished on a pretty high note in that I think the finest moment of his entire cinematic career happened at the end of that movie and gave us our one big redeeming feature.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's just hoping that he ends up linking to the RufusProject.com and gets remotivated again. Because, yeah, definitely, I do remember that final scene now, Trevor. So, gosh, I don't know. We might just have to fill it with some other filmmaker in the meantime.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find something else from his back catalogue if we really need to. But I think I just want to take this moment, and I will have to bleep, but just, Uwe Boll, in your honour, I'm just going to give you a final Guten Tag, motherfucker.
I remember that scene now. And for those that don't, go back and listen to our, it was a Blood Rain 3. Gosh, they all seem to have blended into one another.
Yes, indeed. So there we go. I've already dropped what will be a bleeped F-bomb on a podcast about a family movie. So I think that's a good start for Scooby-Doo and may just tie into some of the stuff I'm going to talk about anyway. So we'll start with the synopsis, though. For this family feature, Scooby-Doo and his clever crime-solving cohorts are individually summoned to Spooky Island to investigate a series of paranormal incidents at the ultra-hip Spring Break hotspot.
And I must admit, just you saying that that plot summary, and of course, as soon as we got to Spooky Island in the movie, I'm like, ah, that's right. I do remember what this movie was all about. It is more than just a ride at Movie World, but I do remember, I think a lot of it was filmed, I think, at Movie World. I remember at the time a lot of people that were sort of connected to it.
Yeah, it was definitely, like, filmed in Queensland. I mean, they used Bond University for some scenes. They used the airport, the actual Brisbane airport for some stuff, so... So, yeah, when you look at, I suppose, from a local point of view for us, this is definitely a locally made movie.
And it definitely felt like it. I don't know if I'm giving away too much, but, yeah, there's something about watching something where, and I felt it too with, what's an example, Inspector Gadget 2, which was filmed in Brisbane over, I think, the Grey Street Bridge and a few different other spots. I know there's always that feel about it that you go, oh... Oh, that does feel like it's here, and therefore it's hard to kind of escape to that fantasy. But I will give it that, you know, I will give it that, though, but and let it slide for my review.
Excellent. Well, before we, I suppose, get too much into the movie itself, we need to talk a bit of turkey trivia.
Oh, of course. And this seems to be you having watched a little bit, yeah. It does seem to have that turkey attached to it. But continue, Trevor.
Indeed. So we'll talk turkey first. It's rated 4.9 out of 10 on IMDb, so I guess hitting that mid-range. Had a budget of $84 million, and now this surprised me. It ended up taking at the box office $275 million.
Yeah, I think I even read that too, and I was quite surprised. It was sort of double the amount I thought. But I do remember when it came out, Trevor, and I'm not sure if you do, but you would probably too, and there was a lot of hype around it too, and I don't know, I'm not just talking about the ride at Movie World, but there was that real hype around it. So I suppose, the first live-action adaptation of Scooby-Doo, I think it's already automatically got half of its budget from its built-in audience. But yeah, it definitely is a high result.
As a little bit extra, because I know we don't normally talk too much about the cast except as it comes up when we're talking about the movie. So I think that it's probably good to mention who's in it and who's involved with the movie before we get into it as well. And I've decided that we should include that in the turkey trivia. Now, one thing that surprised me when I found out about it was that this was written by James Gunn, who we now know very, very much for Guardians of the Galaxy. And he came to this from Troma, where he was actually involved in the Toxic Avengers series and Romeo and Juliet. So quite an interesting pedigree just on the writing side.
Yeah, it definitely has that. He's definitely sort of had a bit of a taste of the adaptation, I suppose, of the live action adaptation. It's funny you say that, because I looked at the name and was like, yeah, I do know that name from somewhere. And I do remember you saying that he was from Troma background. So, yeah, I don't know. It was definitely bringing his colourful background, let's just say, to this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I get to the trivia proper, we'll talk a bit more about what he was going to bring to it. But first, I suppose the main thing we need to look at is the Scooby Gang itself. So, for those familiar with Scooby-Doo, I'm not going to try to describe the characters. I'm just going to say who plays what. So you've got Freddie Prinze Jr. as Fred, Sarah Michelle Gellar as Daphne, Matthew Lillard as Shaggy, Linda Cardellini as Velma, and down a bit, I did have the name of who plays Scooby-Doo. Neil Fanning is the voice of Scooby-Doo. They're joined by the likes of Rowan Atkinson. The band Sugar Ray turns up. Isla Fisher, ooh, who many may know from Home and Away, appears as, I suppose, the love interest. And a couple of cameos in there as well. So it's quite the interesting cast.
Yeah, and I think it was funny because there was a couple of... I saw one girl, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. I've seen her in things like McLeod's Daughters and a few other sort of familiar faces, and it kind of, like we were saying, it's kind of got that connection to us, but you always felt that real sort of Aussie connection whilst watching the movie. And I think it was probably... Well, Isla Fisher looked so different, but I do remember watching her on Home and Away when I was younger, but I think that was it was probably the film that probably brought her into the mainstream from sort of a sitcom, a soapy star. So it was definitely early in her career there. So yeah, it seemed to be a lot of whoever could be in this film and was located near the Gold Coast and had an agent seemed to have made it in.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they would have trawled the young soapy star pool quite extensively for the very large number of extras they have in this movie.
Oh, and there seems to be so many. And I was even thinking, I don't know if you've kind of picked it, Trevor, but where the island scene was actually filmed. Because being filmed in Australia, I was very confused, unless there was just that one shot of the island taken somewhere else and then it was filmed elsewhere. But there was a few times I'm like, oh, where's that supposed to be?
Yeah, I think the island was largely a CGI construct, and they actually did do a lot of the beach filming, like just on the Gold Coast, just at the beaches down there. So,
I see. Yeah. So you did mention Rowan Atkinson, who, even though obviously he's an actor or a comedian that we know so well, but he always seems to stick out so much in movies as being especially in this one, as quite an odd choice. But I found it interesting, Trevor, and us being Rocky Horror fans, but Tim Curry was actually offered the role that Rowan Atkinson took, but refused to take it because he hated Scrappy-Doo and didn't want it anything to do with the movie if he was in it. So I thought that was quite interesting, being very loyal to its origins.
Very much so, and well, my personal feelings on Scrappy-Doo may be similar to Tim Curry's. Then I have something in common with Tim Curry. Yes.
Oh, I think there's more than that. But I think, look, I'm coming in as somebody, I suppose, who's seen the cartoon sort of, you know, probably a few episodes as a kid. But you know, trying to remember too that this was a work. I think it was in the late 60s into early 70s. It sort of was broadcast. So I had to keep remembering that was the time in which it was made, and that sort of in relation to what they were wearing and things like that. So I wasn't familiar with a lot of the things, especially Scrappy-Doo, but I knew that he existed as a character within the show.
Fair enough. I think Scrappy-Doo is probably one of the reasons I stopped watching Scooby-Doo back in the day, but that's another story.
Definitely.
We're definitely getting the trivia out nice and fast, but one thing that I found fascinating, especially when I heard about this, is that this film was originally set to have a much darker tone and was actually going to be poking fun at the original series, and they were aiming for a PG-13 rating. Shaggy was going to be a full-on stoner, Velma and Daphne had a side relationship, and there were going to be many, many marijuana references. According to Sarah Michelle Gellar, after the cast had signed on, then there was a big change and the film became more family-friendly.
That might have been a lot to do with, because I think Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar around the time had that real sort of, I suppose, well, she had the Buffy following, which I assume would have been, you know, still quite teenage. So I can sort of see where they're coming at. But definitely, Trevor, by looking at the film, there's still some parts where you go, oh, this really isn't suitable for children, especially younger children anyway.
Yeah, I think there were a number of things that snuck through that might have been from the original script. And I may just mention a few of those in our chat. One bit of trivia. You were mentioning Buffy, and Sarah Michelle Gellar actually had to film Scooby-Doo around her Buffy the Vampire Slayer schedule. They basically arranged it so that she would spend 2 weeks in LA shooting Buffy, and then spend 2 weeks in Queensland filming Scooby-Doo.
Oh my gosh, it was a real rush, because when you think about it, she is in, as they all are, the gang, but she is in the film quite a lot, so yeah, that would have been quite a rush shoot. Yeah, we were mentioning the stoner references, but they still managed to get past the duchy in there by Musical Youth, which I thought was quite funny when you come to think of it.
And yeah, not just past the duchy, but I will be mentioning a few things as we go through. Now, the director actually wanted a real life couple to play Daphne and Fred, and his first choice was Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. Freddie did not want to do it because he felt it would not live up to the Scooby-Doo cartoons, but Sarah Michelle Gellar had to manage to talk him into it.
Well, so they were actually together at the time, because I'd read that they married shortly after the movie, so that puts it in a bit more context for me.
Indeed. And we've mentioned Frank Welker a few times. He's been a surprise appearance as the voices of various animals in some of our more recent ones.
Ah, yes.
Which may have also inspired the choice of this particular movie.
Okay.
So he voiced Fred Jones in all the, well, he's voiced Fred Jones in all the Scooby-Doo cartoons. But his voice is the one you hear for all the evil creatures in the movie.
Oh, okay. So even though, you know, a bit of a change for him, it's still kind of good to have that bit of a nod to the original series.
Absolutely.
By having him involved.
Yeah. And probably just a couple of things now. If you haven't checked out any of the deleted scenes of this movie, there's one that I think is worth checking out. And it's when Fred, Velma and Daphne meet up at the airport, there was originally a flashback for each of them showing what they've been doing. It showed Fred on his book tour, Velma in a support group, and Daphne learning martial arts. But the flashbacks were cut out because they thought that they dragged out the scene too much.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, that does make sense because Daphne does make reference enough, I felt, in the version that we saw to her martial arts skills. And we got the gist that Fred was kind of into himself. So, yeah, I can kind of see why that made the cutting room floor.
Yeah, but it's actually quite an entertaining scene, I think. So, anyway, that's just my personal opinion. I had to check that one out, and, yeah, that actually helps flesh out the characters, but anyway.
But it was actually a good thing, too, like I was saying before about the whole sort of 60s meets, you know, new. It was kind of like, I suppose you kind of got it in the Brady Bunch live-action adaptation, not live-action, but, you know, the movie adaptation, yeah. How they sort of, the whole sort of 70s meets the 90s, and I kind of, or in this case, was feeling sort of the whole 70s meets the early 2000s, and you still, I thought it was cool how you still had Fred wearing the flares and all that. Obviously, that them being the signature looks, and it's funny, because Daphne's handbag changed into quite a few people, different people's hands over the course of the movie, too. I don't know if continuity, we're watching too closely with that, but yeah, I did like that kind of mixture there, almost like they were still untouched from the cartoon. And even though it was still sort of gave the film that real sort of synthetic feel, I can't explain it, that real sort of set-up feel. After a while, I realised, like we were saying earlier, that they tried to go the sort of spoof on the series. It kind of was being a bit tongue-in-cheek. Once you sort of realised that, I could sort of forgive a few things.
Well, I'm not sure if you can excuse Sugar Ray, because I heard the sound you made before. Would you be interested in knowing that they originally asked Weezer to appear in the movie? They rejected the offer.
Well, at least Weezer have a bit more of a cult or following in some respect, but I must admit I did watch this movie with a friend, and the first thing I said when Sugar Ray came on was, there's nothing that dates a movie more than when Sugar Ray is part of the cast, and it just made it reek of the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like when Smash Mouth song is in a 90s movie.
Oh, definitely. So that's what I felt about this. And the fact that they weren't just making a cameo as in a musical sequence, they even end up getting zombified as well. They're in on the action.
And just finally, because there's lots of trivia on this one, I've had skipped quite a few, by the way, but this is one of the very few Scooby-Doo films or cartoons to reference the fact that the real names of Scooby and Shaggy are respectively Scoobert and Norville.
Oh, yeah, because there was that bit where they were looking for him. So, yeah, that's probably why he looked so startled, because, gosh, they never used that name. So at least they, you know, like, were any of the original writers of the film, I'm sorry, of the TV series part of the movie? Like, I'd like to think they sort of consulted a bit.
William Hanna and Joseph Barbera did get writing credits for the characters, because they were the original writers of Scooby-Doo.
Mm-mm. So whether they sort of, yeah, they probably wouldn't have had any input, but let's just say they sound like they've gone back to the cartoon and tried to incorporate as much as they could, you know, obviously under the time limit too, which I was quite surprised. An hour and 26, I was happy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. But before we get too much into the specifics, we do need to set our baseline, Christian.
Oh, of course.
And this review I've dug up from Amazon simply is titled Scooby-Doo Review. It fails to be both a satire and a homage to the old 1960s cartoon of the same name. Its jokes are so bad that even South Park would call foul on them, and its effects are no better too. The movie also has a lot of mean-spirited moments, like Shaggy wanting to sacrifice his friends in order to save himself, In fact, none of the cast members act anything like the ones in the cartoon. Its use of supernatural elements is out of place in Scooby-Doo, and I'm not counting the 1980s and 1990s TV movies. The dumbest part of the movie is finding out that Scrappy-Doo, Scooby-Doo's nephew, was a villain the whole time, mainly because it was poorly handled. The only upside is Matthew Lillard's performance, but it still fails to help the film in the long run. I gave this film a 1 out of 10. 1 star.
I'm actually kind of glad you did that review, Trevor, because there's a lot of times I was nodding my head without giving too much away. So, yeah, it can only go up from here with 1 star. Wow.
Yes, indeed. And as you've already mentioned, 1 hour 26 under the 90-minute mark. It may have been a conscious choice, because not only did they cut out like that scene at the airport I mentioned before, there was also an original fully animated opening with a rendition of the Scooby-Doo theme song by Shaggy, rapper from the 90s that we just get a little taste of during that opening sequence.
Oh, that is really interesting. And I was even thinking maybe the short time was because, you know, it's sort of aimed at more that sort of family audience, which would have worked, you know. But, yeah, I think definitely cutting those scenes out. But, gosh, it seemed like you mentioned with Shaggy performing there, but, God, how many versions of the theme song or how many times could they try and slip it in? I felt like the entire soundtrack, aside from a couple of Sugar Ray songs, would be pretty much all these different versions of the Scooby-Doo theme song. But, yeah, I suppose kudos to them for you know, having in there a couple of times, but yeah, definitely ramming it down our throats a few other times.
it kind of throws you a curveball at the start, though, kind of throwing you into what is almost the finale of like a traditional convoluted Scooby-Doo storyline where they've got to take out the ghost in the factory and it's an old guy with a mask on. And I would have gotten away with it too if you weren't for your meddling kids.
but it was really good because I felt that it wasted no time because it kind of didn't have to set anything up because, hey, we know they solve mysteries. So, yeah, I suppose it kind of had that assumption that we knew not the backstory, but we'd seen the cartoon and that sort of stuff. But I do know what you mean. It sort of just went straight into it. And you mentioned convoluted. Well, convoluted plots, I felt, would be what happened in the rest of this movie. So I'm kind of glad they gave way with it with the, I don't know, the inflatable man or whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, I can't remember the actual name. It is a named character in there.
And I think the guy that played it was actually the guy who played Bad Boy Bubby, which was another sort of interesting Australian connection.
Yeah, gee, I knew he looked familiar.
Nicholas Hyde, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, his motivation for was because he wanted to romance the suddenly appearing Pamela Anderson just out of nowhere, and I thought that our first little taste of what might have been from the original script was his line saying that he was a lover boy of George Clooneyan proportions. It's like, is that really appropriate?
Oh, I know. And it seemed like everything around this period, I know they did it, oh gosh, with I think like the Austin Powers movies and stuff, it had to have a celebrity cameo to sort of open it. And I think as soon as I saw that, I'm like, ah, it's going to be one of those kind of movies. almost like a product placement movie, but a celebrity version. So I'm kind of glad they didn't continue too much in that vein of trying to ram that stuff down your throat.
Yeah, I mean, from that opening, you kind of expect to be cameos throughout, but thankfully that wasn't to be, which I think is probably a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Too much away from the rest, which doesn't have too much to take away from. But then, oh god, the sad music when they all decide to split at the end. because Fred was a complete ass, but you know.
But it's like they had to get that over and done with early in the movie, you know, so they can all come back and fight again. But it was just kind of like, I think because, actually, going back to what you said, because they'd kind of missed that whole lead up to the whole mystery and the backstory, you kind of didn't feel any sort of remorse for them breaking up because we hadn't sort of got into their story yet. So, I don't know, it was, yeah, it was quite weird. So, yeah, to take back what I said earlier, I think those backstories actually would have been quite handy to have around here, especially in that airport scene.
Yeah, well, those backstory scenes are actually entertaining. That's just the main thing. Look, I'm going to bring out and specifically mention the stuff that I think came from the original script. You did mention that Pass the Dutchie starts playing. and they zoom into the mystery machine at the beach, and there's smoke coming out of the top, and you hear giggling from inside, and Shaggy just goes, "Talk about toasted!"
Again, one of those things that probably slipped through that probably shouldn't have, but would have gone over so many heads.
Yeah, Susie was watching it, she was in and out while we were watching this, but like we both laughed at that line, and my younger son, who was watching it with me, just actually was wondering why we were laughing, but you get that, I guess.
Yeah, at least it's working. You know, that hence a family movie. It works on all levels for everybody. But yeah, so as you said, yeah, at least it was taking on board a lot of that stuff. And hey, if it came out in the late 60s, God, yeah, he would have been smoking some interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just grilling up stuff in the back of the van.
Yeah, hang on, good cover anyway, or eating Scooby snacks. But as you know, not knowing too much about the original cartoon, a lot of it was kind of lost on me, but I still was very much, I knew the references they were getting at. So, but I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but was it around this part where, I'm probably bringing him in too early, but the Scrappy Doo backstory, like I think it was early on when there's that scene in the car, I maybe...
Yeah, you're definitely jumping ahead. I think that hits around the halfway mark. Okay. But that's another one which has some questionable gags for a family movie. But I've got to be like, right from the outset, I mean, because having kids, I have watched a lot of Scooby-Doo, and straight out from the gate, Matthew Lillard as Shaggy, you're like, that one-star review, they praised him. They hated the movie. They praise Matthew Lillard, and I think right from the outset, I started liking him almost straight away. It's just, I could not help myself, and Scooby-Doo himself for 2002 was semi-decent CGI.
Oh, definitely, and as I said, I was watching it with somebody else, and I turned to them and said, you know, do you think this was good for 2002, like, CGI-wise? And yeah, and I actually think we both seem to agree that, yeah, and even the voice, you know, as you said, the voice artist did that, he did a very great job, and I'm sure he seemed to speak more than he probably did in the cartoon, or try and, you know, get a few more sentences out, but yeah, I think you can tell with those two characters, which... When you think about Scooby-Doo, to me, they're the most iconic characters anyway. So it sort of seemed perfect that they were so well done. And you can see that Matthew Lillard really did his homework.
Yeah. And like, when even, I think it really turns out when you do get to that reunion at the airport. Because, I mean, everyone else is largely, I don't want to call them one note. It's not quite like that, but they're very much focused on just playing this role, but like they do their bits, and then Matthew Lillard comes in and he's almost living it, and like he's actually got the range of emotion and like you can almost see like he's talking to an imaginary dog, and you believe the relationship. I mean, that sort of performance level really just almost, it just stood out so much.
Considering he would have filmed that with some, like, a green screen and some, like, you know, robotic thing standing next to him. So, yeah, I definitely... And, hey, you know, we were talking about how Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. were together, but I must admit, Shaggy and Scooby-Doo had more chemistry. As a couple.
Yeah.
Not looking as a... You know, in terms of relationship, not in a, you know what I mean, in a friendship relationship,
yeah,
sort of thing.
No,
so,
no.
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
Yeah, and, Gertrude, because not long after that, Shaggy meets Mary Jane. That's like my favorite name. And are you aware what Mary Jane means in other circles?
Yes. And how appropriate that she was kind of this hippie, free-spirited girl as well. So that was, again, probably one of those things from the PG rating that went through, the PG-rated version of the script. Mm-hmm. But again, would have been lost on many kids. So, yeah, so it seemed quite perfect. But it was also one of those things that, even though I know this is a family movie, and of course things are going to be predictable, but it was one of those things, yeah, you just know something's going to, yeah, you know, they're going to end up being together in some respect and having to work together throughout the movie.
But, yeah, but I think I don't know if they did it to make up for it, but then there's the whole scene because they have to disguise Scooby as Grandma to get him on the plane, and there's also a cat on the plane, and suddenly he starts barking. You see this go see outside, and one of my favorite lines in the movie, straight up, is Shaggy going, Scooby, don't eat, Grandma, don't eat the kitty.
Well, I just love how, there's no animals. I think he even made reference of there's no animals allowed on board, yet there's someone with a cat.
So there's no big dogs allowed on board.
Oh, okay, but we can have small cats. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I love the amount of people that seem to just fall for the fact that we've got a CGI dog standing next to them. But yeah, again, with the relationship that they had between them and the sort of the camaraderie, you know, I can see why people would have been convinced.
And then, because this movie just moves so fast, it'd be before we know it, we're on this very colourful island, very colourful for a spooky island, I thought. But then Rowan Atkinson's character, who again just, I don't know. I mean, I kind of liked Rowan Atkinson's performance, but it seemed a bit out of place.
Yeah, I think it's because he stood out of place as an actor in this movie. I don't know, it was just an odd choice. It was almost like he must have been touring Australia at the time, and it just seemed like an easy choice. But as I said, Tim Curry was offered it, so maybe they were kind of looking for these people that sort of are known to play sort of villainous sort of characters. But yeah, he did seem very out of place, but maybe that was their intentions to spook us, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Tim Curry would have been much more melodramatic, I'm guessing.
Oh, definitely. But yeah, like, oh, God, the whole premise of a spooky island, I thought was such a great thing. But yeah, it's, as you said, it launches you pretty much straight into it. And, you know, we're pretty much told that, again, like it would have been the series, that they had a mystery to solve, hence their reason for being invited there.
Yeah, and it doesn't waste time. I mean, before we know it, we're introduced to this cast of characters. You've got, I'm gonna get these names here. You've got Negu Tawana, who was like the leader of a tribe of natives going that the building of a theme park on their land has angered them. And some random voodoo guy on the beach who's trying to sacrifice a already dead chicken. just odd, it's just like, you know, and they quickly have the suspects between those two and Rowan Atkinson. Oh, no!
And, yeah, and I think before you know it, the plot's almost sort of getting too deep into itself. It's like it's trying to set up all these people that we're going to, you know, like we said with the voodoo guy and Rowan Atkinson and all this, that we're going to see come back later in the film and be a big part in the climax. A climax that sort of didn't really, we'll get to that, but sort of didn't, it wasn't too climactic, let's just say. But, and as a result, the plot became so convoluted, I think, as a result, and we just felt, I was getting confused, and I don't know if that was me being thick or something, but yeah, I felt that, yeah, as you said, with those bringing those characters in, we were just already thrown so many different things, but as a result, we're sort of given this predictability as well.
But especially some of the characters that just seem so out of place. I mean, the voodoo guy just seems to be there purely to give Daphne a reason to go up to the spooky castle, as you do, but then the tribe leader, his sidekick is this guy in just this weird wrestling garb with like a hood with a cape attached to it. It's just like, where does he fit in? What is the point of him even being there? And you barely see that guy until he suddenly becomes irrelevant towards the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And you know, obviously fitting into that whole tribal or sort of voodoo sort of theming of what Spook Island was about, it was obviously then that was going to be a big part of the movie. But I just felt that I think it was probably the wrong mystery for them to have solved for their first live-action movie. I don't know. I think the theming just wasn't right. And it was almost like they were given this opportunity to film in tropical Queensland and, let's put it on a tropical island and do this. But, yeah, and I think as a result, it just probably wasn't the best mystery for them to. And that's what's getting us sort of deeper and deeper into this confusion.
Yeah, I think straight up, if it had have been like a campy spoof, it probably would have landed. A lot more of the beats for the mystery that they were doing would have landed better. And definitely, like, one of the big criticisms across the negative reviews I saw was the fact that it dealt with real monsters rather than people in a mask. And you actually had this thing where the monsters start turning up. And then I noticed that the more monsters that turned up, the more dodgy and ropey the CGI got.
Oh, I know, especially those, I've just got to hear the monsters invade, but yeah, those ones that sort of jut out of the chest and, or, you know, the ones that end up taking over the bodies, yeah, it's like by then in sort of crowd scenes, they're sort of like, oh, okay, Scooby-Doo's really good, we won't worry about the other ones too much.
Yep, yep, the ones that Frank Welker is voicing. But again, got to have a special mention for another thing that happens probably before the monsters start going all over the place, when they do investigate the spooky castle and you get that weird training video montage and Scooby and Shaggy turn up where the training video was filmed and have their little contest, shall we say?
Oh, that's right. and I'm sure it's a scene that would amuse children, let's just say that.
Oh, hell, it amused me. I'm not stopping till your fur singes off. Anyway. It actually, the Razzies gave this movie a special award for best scene of a teenager having a farting contest with a dog.
And probably the only, actually it's probably funny, teenager/grown man, but but yeah, oh, okay, I suppose it's probably one of the only ones I can think of where it's happened, so probably the biggest farting scene since Blazing Saddles, I suppose, I don't know.
Quite possibly, it was quite epic, and and yeah, again, it was a family favourite scene.
That's what I thought. As I was watching it, I'm like, this will win the kids over, I'm sure, too. And the big kids, by the sounds of it.
Indeed. But, like, it has all these, again, it has these strange beats, like, just before, you know, the monsters invade and all their dodgy CGI glory, they're all sitting around a bar or whatever, and you see the tribesmen walk down and it's playing the sinister music and he's eyeing off everyone and looking very serious, and he walks up and then he just fluffs his coat out, sits down, starts playing a nice gentle tune on the piano.
Yeah. Whereas I thought it was he's trying to suss out what she's saying, and I thought he was sitting right next to her, but I don't think it was supposed to be that.
I think there was still a bit of that there, but just like the whole build-up for him doing that, I think, you know, we're seeing the handiwork of James Gunn in that scene.
And you'd be a bit more familiar with his stuff than I would.
And that's, Christian, where we get the flashback. With the echoey, nice, slow version of God Only Knows playing over the top of it.
Yeah, that was weird.
Where Velma's flashing back to the old Scooby gang with Scrappy Doo. And Scrappy Doo peeing on Daphne and marking his territory.
Oh, that was weird. Now, not knowing anything about Scrappy-Doo, I assume he was a character that was brought into the series sort of not to revive it, or, you know, it was a character brought in the second stage of the series, I assume.
Yeah, I guess he was meant to be like the opposite of Scooby-Doo, like he had no fear and he would race into anything. But again, one of those moments that I think made it through from the original script is where he's saying that Fred isn't suitable for being the leader of the gang. And he says, and I quote, "You don't have the scrote for this."
Funny you say that, because I'm like, is that what he actually said, or did I just mishear that?
That's what he actually said.
Oh, gosh. Again, probably one of those other things that slipped by, but kids would have gone, huh?
Yeah, kids went, huh? And parents are going, what have we brought our kids to see?
Oh, no. But already, as we said, by the time we're in the Scrappy-Doo flashback, we're already going, oh, no, they've brought him back. I assume he was a character that wasn't seen quite favourably, so the fact that he was brought back for this, I don't know if it was a good idea.
Yeah, like I said, I am somewhat familiar from when Scrappy-Doo was around. I was watching Scooby-Doo, I guess, at the time that Scrappy-Doo was introduced, and I stopped watching Scooby-Doo because of Scrappy-Doo. And then it was Scooby-Doo like really again until I had kids.
It's like they're doing it as a thing to, we're going to try and include everything from the series, so sort of almost, you know, but setting him as the, I suppose, the villain. I don't know if I'm giving anything away. Ooh, spoilers, but using him as the villain was probably not the right way to go, considering he seems to be not a favourable sort of thing. Well, that said, if he's not a favourable character and is the opposite of Scooby-Doo, it probably does seem natural for him to be a villain, but probably not in the live-action, the first live-action adaptation.
I don't think there's much point in saying spoilers, considering the one-star review specifically said he was a bad guy.
Yeah, I know. I thought we had mentioned it earlier. I knew I could get away with it. But yeah, so using him as a villain was probably, I don't know, not a cop-out, probably not even a twist. It was probably just lame.
Yeah. But one thing I noticed, like, at this point in the movie, and this is where the monsters all invade, and I don't know, you mentioned the music seemed to be all Scooby-Doo, but there's this music that crashes in over when the... when the monsters are all crashing, and I'm sure I've heard it somewhere else before, but it just gets, it's like really jazzy and Cajun-y, and I'm just thinking, god damn, that music is good in the background of this very bad CGI scene of monsters attacking everyone in the hotel.
Oh, so it was in that scene, yeah, and that was one of those scenes where they're just like,
yeah.
It seemed to, even though I know it was people being attacked, it had no sort of sense of order or... It wasn't filmed very well. It was just really a catastrophe to watch.
Yeah, and I guess they tried to make it as cartoony as possible with the Scooby-Doo sneaking through in suitcases and pushing along suitcase trolleys and pushing them through windows and falling through a window onto an awning that the bad guys end up falling through the awning. Just straight out of the cartoon.
Oh, okay. So at least, yeah, so, it, you know, someone having seen it, like, yeah, at least there's some good references to that, so... But I did feel, like I think I mentioned earlier, it seemed a bit violent in parts, but, yeah, this was one of those scenes where I'm like, not violent, it was just very... There was a lot of destruction.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it was good that the monsters were a bit ropey with the CGI and did look a bit unconvincing, because... Things like when Rowan Atkinson gets grabbed through the floorboards, I think if that was done in good CGI, that would have been close on terrifying.
Oh, yeah, I do know the bit you mean, yeah. And that's the thing, yeah, I suppose you've kind of got to hold back a bit with a children's film too and not make it too realistic. But again, probably one of those choices that they probably shouldn't have gone with the mystery that they had to solve. But I assume in the original it was very monster-based. Too. As a result, they with the whole voodoo thing, it was sort of, I think I read somewhere that it was weird that they went sort of a supernatural angle, because it was sort of, they didn't really go that much in the original series, but I'm assuming they would if they had monsters.
Yeah, I mean, it was really all robots or people in suits basically controlling the robots. Yeah, there was always a man in the mask, which is a few gags of that are made throughout the movie. But I think, you know, as creepy as that scene of Rowan Atkinson being grabbed was, I think the creepiest thing in this entire movie was the possessed band Sugar Ray. There was just something so wrong about it.
Oh, no, it's bad enough, as I said earlier, using them in a scene where they have to perform, but then having them actually start being zombified and attack people, it was just almost like they should have got the Razzie for the worst band making a cameo / acting appearance in a film.
Yeah, they're like, they try to bash into this place where Scooby and Shaggy have holed up, and they're like smashing through the walls and the windows with guitars and everything. Like, it's just like straight up, there's just no denying it. So you are your band, and you are going to attack people as your band. You know, so it was good to see that level of commitment, I guess.
It's like, we need you for this movie, we want you to perform a song in it, but we also want you to to be in some of the crowd scenes. So, hey, it would have been double whammy. You got them for the same price.
Yeah, value for money from
definitely.
Dodgy early 2000 bands. But yeah, not long after that, we get another one of those great drug gags where, after escaping Sugar Ray, Shaggy finds a big pot full of the souls of all the people on the island, and he pulls out Fred, who's just freaking out, just goes, "Talk me down, man, talk me down."
Oh no, and he's like fishing through this thing and just happens to pull out the heads that he needs, except for a couple out of these thousands of people. Yep.
Well, it was established earlier that he was good at, like, those crane games. And I think the way,
yes,
the way his hand's moving around, I think it's meant to be like a little flashback, like a little thing with that, after he gets the plushy severed head for Mary Jane. They're talking about it's his big skill.
Well, that's kind of, I'm giving the film a bit more credit now, I must admit, for setting up that earlier. I now understand. And what did he say? Something about, and she's like, I think people that do skill tests are so much smarter, or something like that. So yes, I do like the fact that they set that up early.
And yeah, I think that's the only thing I've only really noticed that over, because I've, again, children, we have watched this movie more than once in my household.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So repeat viewings, you do kind of, I suppose, catch a few more bits and pieces, which is fine.
And hey, movies are supposed to be watched again, but I do actually remember seeing the film a few times when it first came out, but trust me, most of this movie, I'm like, I can't remember any of this, so I don't know what's going on. I think I must have been seeing it through a different set of eyes, so...
Quite possibly. You weren't watching it with the redeeming features in mind. That's what it was.
Yes, definitely. So,
oh god, another highlight. Another highlight is as Shaggy releases the spirits of his friends, and two of them get lost, and we get a couple of nice little body swap gags.
Oh, of course. Which had you heard about? Apparently, one of the deleted scenes was Daphne and Velma being mixed up, and there was actually a kiss between the two. I don't know, I may be wrong, but I did read that somewhere, and that was actually part of that scene where they were all trying to swap all the souls back again, and it was a scene that was cut out because it was considered too PG.
Well, again, James Gunn was originally going to have Velma and Daphne actually have some sort of relationship, so... I would imagine that. There is a deleted scene of Velma possessed dancing in very skimpy swimwear that I have seen, which obviously would have come from the PG version.
I might have to track those deleted scenes down. It might put a whole new spin on the movie for me.
Quite possibly. I was about to get ahead of myself. There's something I'm saving for the final comments, and I almost gave that away. but then after all that happens, the only point of the voodoo guy on the beach happens, where he just flat out explains what the bad guy's plan is in extreme detail, as he's explaining why he's doing voodoo to protect himself from what they plan. So, like, the entire point of him being there was just to basically tell them what was going on. It's like, that's great.
How convoluted the plot is. Like, you know, as if we needed more stuff to have to add in. But I suppose we had to have someone explain it.
I suppose they didn't really spend too much detailing what the overall plan was, just little bits here and there. So at some point they really had to flesh out exactly what was going on so that the Scooby Gang could make a plan to stop it. And, Velma does the great line, let's get jinky with it, which,
Oh, God, yeah, that's the thing, like, again, even though, you know, it was just, again, these references from the late 90s and early 2000s, it just dated the movie automatically, just little references like that. That's another one of those things.
Well, I tell you what, once it worked out that Rowan Atkinson is a robot and piloted by Scrappy-Doo, Scrappy-Doo's transformations is flat out disturbing. It's just
it's scary, because I'm assuming in the cartoon he never kind of had any sort of transformation like that, and was never seen as a puppy. Oh, sorry, he's just got a glandular problem, apparently. That's what Velma said, so that again confused me. But yeah, the transformation was bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they were trying to make it both monstrous and comical at the same time, and it's just, yeah, it's just ends up being ever so slightly wrong.
And I think it was, again, one of those cases where it sort of felt with the same CGI as the monsters, where it just felt like, oh, this isn't even good CGI. But yeah, it would have been even more horrific.
But I am glad to see, as part of this scene, as part of, you know, let's defeat the big bad, where Sarah Michelle Gellar finally gets to use some of the Buffy training, and the wrestler dude, the sidekick to the head of the tribe, suddenly has relevance for being there because, yeah, basically has a fight scene with Sarah Michelle Gellar, which is entertaining, but again, just seemed rather out of place and very, very sudden.
Yeah, it just seemed to not go for, when I say go for long, it didn't drag for like minutes, but it was just one of those things. Yeah, it was almost like, okay, you can get this over and done with and move on to the next thing. But yeah, it was like they really wanted to show off her talents because they'd cut that scene out earlier. To show it off.
Indeed. Yeah, we've got Buffy in this movie. God damn it, we need to have some Buffy moves.
I actually knew a girl who her friend was the stunt double for that scene. It was so, as a result, I'm watching that entire scene going, oh, that's not Sarah Michelle. Oh, that's not her there. But yeah, I must admit, they do cut it together and edit it quite well. But yeah, once you sort of know the secret, it's sort of, it's hard to see the illusion.
Alrighty, you got that glimpse behind the curtain and never be the same again.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you what, like, another thing that I noticed that really stood out to me is, you know, of course, everything ends up nicely. They find the real Rowan Atkinson in a hole.
I know.
I think he comes out, he's like so bearded and dirty and all this sort of stuff. And then, you get to the bit where they're heading down the back of the jetty with cheering crowds around them as the bad guys get put into helicopters by the cops. And, in the background, there's Rowan Atkinson, completely clean shaven, back in his suit that he'd been wearing for the entire movie. I think he got cleaned up really fast.
Oh God. Maybe it's not a robot. Oh God. But yeah, it's just, and that's one thing about the ending. It was very, I know it's a family movie and it all has to be happy, but it was so lovey dovey. Everyone off in their little couples and things. I don't know. It seemed to go that real angle.
But I'm just wondering, because, I mean, Scrappy-Doo got cut off with his, I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you, and they closed the door. I'm just wondering with the PG-13 if we would have heard a bit more of that speech.
Oh, yeah.
Because the reaction from the Scooby gang is just like, ah!
Yeah, because I was even thinking, if he said son of a whatever, like, yeah, the reaction is a bit more full-on than him saying that. So, yeah, that's probably what happened. Maybe they'll release a director's cut one day, I don't know. Hey, it's the 15th anniversary next year.
Ah, there we go. There may be, we maybe hope for seeing a more complete version of this movie, if that's your, but if that's your idea of a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, I suppose with James Gunn doing the Marvel stuff, we had a credit scene, which I don't know. It kind of just, it's interesting enough. And I guess it's a flashback to Scooby and Shaggy, you know, and their eating habits, which features quite heavily in the cartoon series. But it just kind of doesn't really, cause the rest of the movie is so frantic and fast paced, and this is just like a nice little dinner scene with a couple of chili gags in it. Yeah, just really seemed out of place.
It was almost like that was something that was supposed to be in a flashback scene or something that was used earlier, and they've just gone, oh, let's shove it in there. But like, I know we, you know, I suppose you don't really call this the stinger, I suppose, because that's sort of after the credits. But for a stinger or whatever you want to call it, for a credits scene, yeah, it's very pointless, and it would have made people sit in the cinema waiting for something to happen and go, oh yeah, it is pretty much just a chili gag.
yeah, and that would force people to still be in their seats when that terrible Scooby-Doo rap thing starts.
Oh, I know. Because I think it's that and then some other song, which has already escaped me. But
another bad rap based on Scooby-Doo.
Again, another opportunity to bring. Because I think they did the same with the Addams Family movies of the early 90s. They'd always have like a rap version of the theme song or something like that. So I don't know why there seems to be this lenience to doing that sort of stuff, especially around that time.
I don't know. I just know that the songs, we have to sit all the way through the credits, and occasionally it's just like, why did I insist that we had to do that? I've got to sit through this entire terrible, terrible Scooby-Doo rap. And there's a second one straight behind it. Oh, God.
I know. And there isn't even a stinger to make it good at the end, so.
Yeah. Well, that's... We're talking about the credits, Christian, so was there anything else you wanted to mention before we move on?
Aside from my redeeming features, I think we've pretty much, we've covered a lot. You've covered heaps of stuff that I had forgotten, Trevor, so I don't know if forgetting was something that was necessarily warranted. I don't know, but I am interested to hear sort of a final verdict, and if there's any fans out there of this movie or anything.
Fair enough. Well, I chose the movie, Christian, so when it comes to talking redeeming features and if this movie is redeemable, I shall let you go first.
Oh, wow. Gosh. Well, look, I think to go back to the one-star review that was mentioned earlier, and I know, ouch, one-star review, look, there was a lot of things in that I was nodding my head about. The problem with this, and I mentioned earlier the Brady Bunch adaptation, and I hate to use it as a sort of comparison, but I felt that in a first live-action adaptation for a particular cartoon series, they really should have established the characters, used what we were saying earlier, used those backstories that were eventually cut out, and sort of given us a bit more of a context before launching into the mystery. It felt like they were sort of giving us possibly a movie that had been cut in half, and it sort of, we were starting straight into it and with this frantic pace, and it never seemed to let up. In terms of choosing a mystery, I think, you know, again, using that Brady Bunch reference, they had to raise money to save their house or something like that. So a plot that wasn't too confusing. In this, it was a plot that was almost so convoluted. Okay, fair enough, the people on this island are becoming, zombified, and they're trying to wonder, working out what happens, but every scene seemed to add even more questionable stuff into it, and more plot devices that I thought to myself, God, even I'm getting confused, what are children thinking? And unfortunately, as a result, it sort of had that sort of violent side as well, too, that we were saying, sort of verging on the PG and G, so I really think it had a bad plot / bad mystery. I don't think they should have gone the plot that they used. I don't think it was something that should have worked for this movie at all, and didn't work. And I think, I don't know if it was the fact that it was made in Queensland too, but it was very studio banned, and it felt so Australian, and I just couldn't get past it. So, so as a result, Trevor, I'm very mixed. It's so hard. Look, watching this movie in new eyes, I'm going to have to say it's irredeemable. It was embarrassing. There was too much about it that I just went, no, this deserves to stay in 2002.
Fair enough. And irredeemable from Christian.
I'm sorry. I actually feel bad because, I wanted to give this film the time of day, but no, I can't.
Yeah. I think, where it really does suffer is the fact that this original idea was for a different and much more risque movie. And having some of that stuff filtering through into the more family friendly one that it ended up being, really, I think, does take away from what this movie could have been. I mean, it is aimed, I suppose, at Scooby-Doo fans in a way. The Scooby-Doo cartoon series, if you wanted sensical plots and logical mysteries to solve, look elsewhere anyway. But look, like the fact that they're trying to make it more family friendly makes like the drug references and the more risque moments really stand out a lot more. And I can imagine parents with young kids who are watching this for the first time getting worried about what the kids might be being exposed to with this movie. But then you got the older viewers who would appreciate the more risque stuff. They kind of get it handed to them and then snatch back. Look, having seen some of the deleted scenes, it would have been good if they'd been left in there, because it would have helped flesh out some of the characters and some of the plot, even though, again, a lot of the deleted stuff probably leans more towards the more mature version of this movie. But it certainly would have helped flesh out the Scooby gang. And, I mean, as it is, it's only really Shaggy that gets much in the way of character development. But saying that, though, I mean, the Scooby gang, like, the actors committed to their characters, and they obviously enjoyed the roles, and I think that helped keep some of the fun of the movie. And again, look, Matthew Lillard as Shaggy, I mean, straight out, he's probably straight out the star of this movie, and showing why he's actually taken over from the late Casey Kasem as the official voice of Shaggy in the cartoons. The movie itself, though, I mean, it does not make sense. It's all over the place. But it is colourful. It's fast paced. And I think it's got enough laugh and fun in there to make up for the bits that fall flat. And look, I would love to see James Gunn's original idea for this movie, but failing that, and James Gunn has pretty much made it clear that there isn't a version of the movie that exists that matches his original script. But you know what? I'm perfectly happy to watch this version again. It's fun. I got good laughs out of it. It's a nice, easy movie to sit down and watch if you don't worry too much about the convolutedness of it all. And Christian, it's redeemable for me.
Oh, how did I know you were going to say that? Oh, God.
I don't know. Maybe when I started praising it.
Oh, well, after our last one where we both, I think, gave it a resounding no, we've got to have that bit of a mixture now. So, yeah, I did feel quite bad towards the movie, but, yeah, I had to say it like it is from my point of view.
And that is fine. That's why it's good to have two different people looking at these movies, because we've got different tastes and different experiences. So that is all good. So, another split decision. We've had a few of those this year. And there's nothing wrong with that. But certainly, this movie does have its fans. Not just me. It's got even bigger fans out there. And I've dug up another review from Amazon to, I suppose, round out what the fans really think about it. The title of this review is Go Scooby. I don't understand why all the critics were so hard on this movie. I thought it was one of the best movies I saw all year. The movie is cartoonishly fun and doesn't take itself seriously, unlike Spider-Man, which was also excellent. The movie was made to be a nostalgic good time, and a longtime fan of the cartoon, I loved how much they were able to recreate the cartoon characters without trying to change them. Oh sure, there's a bit of potty humour in it, but geez, this is the age we live in. Frankly, it wasn't nearly as bad as some other movies employing the same technique. It was quite mild. The cast was incredible. Sarah Michelle Gellar can play virtually any role she wants and make believable. She's great as Daphne. I couldn't believe how dead-on Matthew Lillard was as Shaggy. He even got the voice right. And as for all the people who diss this movie for whatever reason, why don't you enjoy something for what it is, a light-hearted adventure? 5 stars.
God, it sounds like that person just had their guard up trying to protect that movie as much as possible. But yep, good to know there's 5-star reviews out there.
Yeah, but look, straight up, across all the reviews, I don't think I saw any review saying that Matthew Lillard wasn't good.
Yeah, oh gosh, it's almost like, not that this film would be, I know it's not an Academy Award type film, but it's one of those performances that, yeah, it just has that sort of written all over it, doesn't it? But yeah. Getting an Academy Award for Scooby-Doo probably wouldn't have been a thing.
No. Well, look, if I'm going to fangirl out of anyone in this movie, I'm going to fangirl over Matthew Lillard, straight up.
Well, because I think he'd come out of, I know he's in Serial Mum, the John Waters film, and then he was in the Scream series, so I think he'd kind of been fresh off that when he'd come into that, so, but I think this will probably be the one that he'll be remembered for, I think.
Yeah, I believe there was a quote, I couldn't actually find it, but like he's been in Shakespearean movies, he's been in horror movies, he's been on all these different things, but what he's most remembered for is having a farting contest with a dog. But anyway, on that note, and who doesn't like to finish with a fart joke? We should probably look at what we're going to move on from Scooby-Doo.
Ooh, and gosh, Trevor, let's just say we've been doing the Rufus Project for a couple of years now. And the thing is, we've managed to go through quite a lot of movies that it got actually to the stage this week when I'm like, oh gosh, what are we going to choose for the next film? I had an idea of a movie and I thought, well, this could be an idea. But then I thought, oh no, I don't want to have to watch this movie. So while I was having a bit of a think about it before, I'm like, oh, hang on, there's another film by this director that was actually a remake. And it came out sort of around the time period what we were looking at with Scooby-Doo. So we're going back to 2001. So quite a bit new for the retro king me, but I thought we'll give it a go. So it's not 2001 A Space Odyssey, but something kind of along that vein, I suppose you could say. Now, there is another film of this series, of this new franchise that is coming out, and so I thought, let's go back to the one that's probably forgotten, and I don't know if it's forgotten for good reason. I've never actually seen this remake before, but I do know that it has been criticised a lot by critics. We are going to go back to 2001 and look at the Tim Burton remake of Planet of the Apes.
Ooh!
Now, interestingly, I haven't even seen the first Planet of the Apes from the 70s. I've seen, the late 60s, I think it was. I've seen a lot of the other ones, and I've seen the newer films, you know, from the last couple of years that they've been doing sort of every year. So let's go back to the one, Trevor, that seems to be, I don't know, it seems to top so many bad movie lists, and I sort of think it's been forgotten, and let's bring it out of the vault and see if it's any good.
Well, Christian, you have picked one that I have not seen before, and you have me intrigued. So, yeah, the remake of Planet of the Apes, it is.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it's something unusual. It's got Helena Bonham Carter. But I'm like, hang on, it's a Tim Burton film. Of course she's in it. I'm quite a fan of Helena Bonham Carter, so it's a shame I can't see her in something. I always say the best thing she ever did was Fight Club, the non-Burton film. So it's I'll go into it with an open mind. So and quite interesting for me, considering I'm not really a Tim Burton fan, not a sci-fi fan, and not really a fan of remakes. So I'm going a little bit non-Christian for this choice.
Fair enough. Now the great podcasting staple of man looking up something on the internet on an audio podcast. I've done a quick search, and so if anyone out there wants to watch Planet of the Apes before our next Redeeming Features cast, it can be streamed on Netflix, which is always a good thing. You can also rent or buy it from Google Play, the Microsoft Store, or Dendy Direct, which is a new one on this list. There we go.
Oh, a few options, which is good. So I know I'll be watching on one of those. So
all good. And, of course, if you do watch it, or if you have some thoughts on Scooby-Doo, we would love to hear from you. It's very easy to get in touch with us. You can head to our homepage, RufusProject.com. Especially if you're listening, Uwe Boll, we want to hear what you think about our Blood Red episodes. And you can leave a comment below this very episode. You can also check out our backlog of Redeeming Features movies.
Oh, God, there's been heaps. Oh, there's been heaps.
It's a roller coaster ride. Let's just put it that way. You can also find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook, or you can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com, and we would certainly love to hear from you.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to tackling Planet of the Apes, and I'm just sorry I couldn't redeem Scooby-Doo this time around, Trevor, so maybe ask me to watch it in another 15 years, I might change my mind.
Well, that's all right. Well, I did pick it because that opinion is divided. When you look at the criticism for it, it seems to be people like it, or they just think it's a terrible adaptation, so I guess it was perfect for the Redeeming Features. We couldn't agree, so, yep, anyone out there has to make up their own mind now. Isn't that wonderful?
We'll make them watch it, but I'm sure you don't think that's as bad. But, guys, run now. That's okay. But, yeah, so we'll see what Planet of the Apes can do, see if we can be unanimous with our liking or disliking of that movie.
Absolutely. Well, until then, Christian, thank you so much. As always, it's awesome to chat Redeeming Features movies with you, and I'm definitely looking forward to chatting Planet of the Apes.
Definitely, Trevor. Always so much better than the movie is our chat. So looking forward to it.
All right. See you then.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the Redeeming Features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming Features.
Thank you.
Wow, 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 Scooby, yo, and Scooby say, you know the Scoob and Shaggy in the house. Wow, 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 Scooby, yo, and Scooby say, you know the Scoob and Shaggy in the house.
In the van of mystery, making doggy history, rolling drop the 20s, so you better not be dissing. They got a brained out collar and an iced out chain. When I'm rolling down the block, yo, say my name.
Scooby Doo, y'all, Scooby Dooby Doo, y'all. Scooby Doo, y'all, Scooby Dooby Doo.
I said, check 1, 2, 1, 2, up on my Scooby mic. You never knew a dog.